So anyway, there I was out walking in the pouring rain with a big sack of dirty old clothes over my shoulder. I was looking for an all-night laundromat in the middle of the day, when all of a sudden I said to myself, Pete, I said, what the hell do you want? Well, I will tell you what I want. I want to reach out my hand and touch the moon and the stars, and I want to taste the bittersweet trials of life on the tip of my tongue, and I want to be my love in the body of life, because this is a democracy after all, and I want to throw out my television because it kicks me in the forehead and takes away my creativity. I want to know why the government keeps secret files on extraterrestrials and all the photos are out of focus, and I can't get rid of this dull empty ache in the bottom of my gut. Some people live the most enchanted lives. Some people can love and love. Some people have such a fearful mystery, and I want to find out. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. And I start to think about some of the ways I have tried to find myself. There's been Catholicism, Judaism, sexism, botulism, chauvinism, lying in my bedism. And yes, I have felt moments of ecstasy in my genital area. We cried about the outcome seconds later. And it occurred to me why we do not promote abstinence. It is because it does not sell, which means we are not courting the devil. We are courting capitalism. But don't get me wrong, I hate communism too. They're both lies, lies, lies to control us. Some people live the most enchanted lives. Some people can love and love. Some people have such a feel for mystery. Some people seem to rise above, yeah. Some people live the most enchanted lives. And some people can love and love. Some people have such a feel for mystery. Suddenly, whoa! I see my reflection in a store window, and I can't help but say, hey, who loves ya? Now that depends on what the hell is love! Now love is what lets us forgive Eve for taking a bite of that shiny red apple. Love is what lets us forgive ourselves for getting angry at God for planting the tree in the first place! Oh! So biblically then, God is love. Love is God, and God says, love thy neighbor, and he says, love thy enemy too. So I say, even if there are billions of religious people, and still human misery abounds, nothing can stop me from thanking that mystery that has created us all. But if God is perfect, and he created everything, where the sin fit in?
Some people live the most enchanted lives. Some people can love and love. Some people seem to rise above, yeah. Some people live the most enchanted lives. Some people can love and love and love and love. Some people, yeah. Some people. And I wanna find out. I wanna find out why.
I woke up and fell out of bed. Unshaved and unfed, I had a dream in my head that never came true.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 500th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada, and I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Alberta.
500 friggin' podcasts.
I know. And how many did I think we'd go? How many did I think before this thing would fold?
Three. Not 300.
I thought we'd maybe go a little longer, but I sure didn't think we'd go to even 50.
Yeah,
much like 500.
So today, what we're going to do? Well, we're going to go back into history a little bit, just to let you know some of the stuff that we did over the last 500 podcasts. And we want to obviously thank a lot of people who've helped us out, but then we want to bring it all back together at the end by going through a few cases and thinking about how much of the information that we've been talking about over the years, how we could maybe apply that. I think that's kind of where we want to go, right?
For sure, for sure. And when I was joking about people should know, if they don't know already, that I underestimated everything. I thought Tools for Practice would fold after about 10. I thought no one would come to the pipe conference. And So I'm pretty poor at forecasting whether something will be a success or not.
So all of this, for those of you who haven't been with us right from the beginning, this all started April 3rd, 2008. So that was 13 years ago.
Yeah. And the way it started, we should mention, you came to me, I was speaking at your conference.
Yeah.
And you said, we should do one of these podcasts. And I asked, what's a podcast? Exactly.
Yeah. So, and you still ask that.
And, I still do.
Yeah. And so we created the very first episode that we created was called Philosophy, Guidelines, and the Truth. And, I think the title is kind of what we've been doing for the last 500. But you'll be very happy to, I don't know if you remember, it was 12 minutes long.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. The dream.
I know, the dream podcast. So that was the first one. And then our second one was Evidence Does Not Equal Decision Making. And that was 14 minutes long. And I think those two actually really tell you what we're going to be talking about for the next 500 podcasts.
100 podcasts, yeah. And they were pretty spot on then, and solid, I would say.
And for those of you who've been following along, we've actually changed the name of the podcast a few times. It used to be called the Therapeutics Initiative Podcast. Then I stopped working with the Therapeutics Initiative, and then we became the sort of Therapeutics Education Collaboration Podcast. And that lasted out for quite a long time, right, Mike? And I think we've mentioned this in previous podcasts. You and I were sitting in a hot tub.
Yes, that's right. I think you were visiting for a conference, and you, I, and others were out in the hot tub, and we started to discuss what might be an interesting name for the podcast.
Yeah, and so we came up with BS Medicine or Best Science Medicine, and that's the one we're using today. But I don't know if people know that, but we used to, some of the names that we bandied about were, we thought would be good to call the podcast the Bitch About Everything Podcast. But that didn't get any traction.
You said pitch, right? With a P, not the
B. Sure, that's what I said. Yeah. And then remember, it was the Nothing Works Podcast.
Yeah.
But, that would be, very short.
Like the Seinfeld, almost like the Seinfeld. Show about nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And then we've got a little bit, I remember getting a little lofty. It was We Know Everything About Everything Podcast.
Yeah. That was the position you took.
Yeah. And then that quickly flipped to We Know Nothing About Anything Podcast.
That's when my imposter syndrome set in.
Yeah. And then the last one was Make Everything Up and See How Many People Will Listen to Them Podcast. And that was... And in fact, all of those could be decent titles for the podcast, really.
They could be decent titles. But yeah, the goal was always to provide summaries of evidence. And so I think and with the philosophy of trying to promote shared decision making and all the things that we've joked about, like low dose and just patient safety first, all of those kind of, boy, that's almost Hippocratic Oath stuff there.
But
those themes carry through, and it's remarkable to me now to reflect that we could do it in 12 or 14 minutes.
Big tear up and down my spine if I went back and listened to it, so I didn't. But as you know now, roughly each one now is around 30 minutes. And if you do the math on that, it'd be about 15,000 minutes of this podcast.
Wow. That's of just, gem.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's 250 hours. You could literally, for 8 hours a day, listen to us for an entire month, including weekends.
I think some countries are introducing this as a type of punishment for different crimes.
Oh, yeah. They you can spend a year in jail.
Or
listen to this for 31 days. Yeah. And then we'll talk a little bit about that when we talk about the help that you guys have provided. So we, for a premium membership, it's $50 a year. And so that works out to be 10 cents a podcast. And Mike, it's worth every penny.
Ooh, again, you might be exaggerating a bit there.
Yeah.
It has value.
It has, yes, in one way or the other. And so that's the stuff that we've done over the years. And, you know, we couldn't have done a lot of this without a lot of people who we've actually brought onto the podcast. And I just thought I'm just going to run through their names and just let you know that we really, really appreciated all the people who have helped us out. The people like Bob Rangnow, Adil Vrani, Tina Koronik, Adrian Lindblad, Mike Kolber, Tony Nikinchuk, Paul Fritsch, Jen Potter, Mark McConnell, Samantha Moe, Jamie Falk, Scott Garrison, Joey Tan, Nick Dugray, Adam Keogh, Jessica Kirkwood, Daniel Perry, Barb Farrell, Tim Caulfield, Gary Block, Alan Castles, John Ferrance, David Gardner, Denise Campbell Schreer, John Sloan, Laurie Mallory, and Paige Morehouse. And I may have missed some, and I sure hope I didn't. If I did, let me know, and we'll let you know again. But those are the people who've come on and helped us with a number of these podcasts. I mean, we ended up doing, I was on all of them, and you missed one. But other than that,
I missed one. I was going to say, yeah. I've actually, this isn't my 500th. This is my 499.
Well, yeah, we actually had one. Yeah, you're right. I think it's, yeah. But yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
It's all made up anyway.
Yeah, I was a way for that one. And then, James, no, you listed the names, but we never heard back from Barack Obama, did we? Because we had invited him.
No, you remember, he came, it just wasn't good.
That's the only one we
didn't post. We didn't post that one. Don't.
He was just going on.
Oh, he never shut up.
about his accomplishment getting medical coverage.
In the U.S. Yeah, so that was the only one. But other than that, the rest of the people were brilliant. And and also, I think, you know, we really have to be very thankful of all the people that write the tools of practice that we've been using for years and years and years.
Oh, sure.
And you know, we're up to now 300 of those. And yes. I don't know if you probably remember, you wrote the very first one.
I did write the very first one. I wrote a lot of the very early ones because Mike and Tina were just getting on board at the time. Tina was the first to help, and then Mike, inevitably. But yeah, the first one was something that we do a little bit in Tools for Practice. We try and address current controversies, mm-hmm. and that was the first one.
Yeah, and that was that started just about a year after we started the podcast. It was in May, the first Tools of Practice came out May 15th, 2009, and it was, should we react to C-reactive protein?
Yeah, that was, as you know, the story of trying to find extra things that we can test for cardiovascular disease certainly didn't end with C-reactive protein, but it, like many of these ideas, rose and then fell, and now is not really used anymore. And no. They kind of, I know the CCS kind of rolls their eyes that they were duped into believing that, but I would say that they're down that same path with apolipoprotein.
Yeah, I agree. And then we ended up writing an article about it. I don't know if you remember. We sort of called it CRP, a completely ridiculous practice, or something like that.
Yeah, we had originally, again, that was another time where the title mattered. Yeah. So we got, was it BMJ that took that article? I can't remember.
Yeah, no, it wasn't BMJ,
they basically shut us down with our original title, which was a tad bit more offensive.
Yeah. I wasn't going to bring this up, but I also remember doing it. I think I maybe told it many years ago about doing a debate on C-reactive protein in front of about, couple hundred Toronto cardiologists, and I was saying the test is just not good enough. It's not that predictive and all that sort of stuff. And one of the lead people who thought this was C-reactive protein was just the greatest thing ever. His very last comments to the crowd was about me, and all that he had to say was, "This is why you and people like you are doing such harm to the people of Canada." And you know, it's that. It's a really interesting process when you do any sorts of debates. If it goes south, is people get quite angry. But
yeah, they can, and that's why I generally avoid. I think one of the few debates I participated in, the fella ended up taking my position in the end. Not because I think it was in the end, but he came in with my position or close to it anyway. And it was about not worrying about targets so much, but just getting people on statins. And so he had a very similar philosophy. And yeah, so it ended up we kind of just agreed, which wasn't a great debate.
No. Yeah, no, that's almost the opposite definition of debate, where you all agree. But I think most importantly, Mike, I think we really want to thank the people who've listened to us. And there's literally tens of thousands of people who have listened to us, and some of them from the beginning.
And some of them listen to a second one.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I can't tell you how much we've appreciated all the feedback we've gotten, because it's almost all been positive, Mike. I really can't think of any, you know, we've had a few things on YouTube, not on YouTube, on podcast, where the first few, the sound wasn't as good as it could have been. And, you know, we were sort of getting used to doing it. But other than that, you know, the feedback's been very positive. Now, obviously, if you don't like us, you probably wouldn't have listened to us and that sort of stuff. But we've had great feedback from everybody. And really, also really, really want to thank all the people over the years who've supported us via the Premium Podcast, because it's really helped us keep this going. You know, it's not really, really, really expensive to do a podcast. But there is an expense associated with it. And we were able to do this the whole time with no external funding and no advertising, which is really unusual for any podcast.
And God knows we hunted for advertising.
Well, exactly. But, you know, so many car companies said no.
So many.
Yeah.
So many. Yeah.
You know, McDonald's was thinking about it, but then, yeah.
You wanted to do the nutrition podcast.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So, no, we really, really appreciate all you guys who've listened to us over the years. Obviously, it's the only reason we do it. There'd be no point in doing it if no one listened to us. And, you know, and I think, you know, I have no idea how much longer we'll continue. I would imagine we'll get to 501, but beyond that, I have no idea.
It's been fun so far.
Yeah.
And we have a kind of, you know, and some of them have become running jokes in the podcast, but we have kind of themes that we do, you know, stress over time in multiple podcasts. And James, you want to kind of run through some of those key ones?
Yeah. And as people know, we've covered a broad range of topics, anywhere from, you know, diabetes to cabbage leaves for breast engorgement, statins, and pretty much any condition somewhere between the tops of your head and the bottom of your feet, we've covered it. And, you know, we're going to go through some cases, but we just wanted, you know, some of the things that we've talked about are, you know, using low doses, you know, the issue of surrogate markers. And we've, you know, beaten that drum for a long, long period of time. And you know what, Mike? We're going to have to keep doing it, because it never seems to get much better. We've talked a lot about values and preferences that we incorporate into the decisions on a day-to-day basis, and that fundamentally changed how we think about things. You know, and I think we found really that the evidence, the devil is always in the details, right?
Oh, for sure. That you know, when you think about the challenges in evidence interpretation, whether it's, you know, what's thrown into the meta-analysis and how they're not the same, or whether they're using, you know, certain statistics inappropriately, or, you know, I can think of studies where they, for example, there's a, you know, there's a back pain study that found yoga was very helpful for back pain, but surprise, surprise, all people were white women between the ages of 40 and 50 in that study. And so it's a select group. And there's all sorts of examples like that, like back pain, for example. Other studies of back pain show that if you recruit from the population, you don't find a benefit. One of my favorite studies is one of a really well done study of treatment of depression or prevention of depression. Treatment of depression with vitamin D, 5,000 international units every day. And the people enrolled in the study weren't depressed. So it was really hard to treat their depression, it turns out.
Yeah. But it worked.
It didn't work, unfortunately. No. And that's the challenge. So there's, you know, just as we talk we roll our eyes at depression, or sorry, at vitamin D research and why it's being funded. Part of the, we have to acknowledge part of the reason it's failed to show benefit for some conditions is not necessarily because it doesn't work, but because the research has been so poor. So yeah. we do try and, you know, delve in and look at both sides of the equation for the listener and come up with. So yeah, I don't say right now that it doesn't work to treat depression because we don't actually know.
No, exactly. So, and I think, you know, one of the things that we hopefully stressed is that you cannot just read the abstract other than for your own amusement. Yes.
And you
really do have to go look at the numbers. You're talking about who was studied, but you also got to just look at the numbers and the size of it and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And one of the things that, you know, I think we've found, and we've been, you know, we've done a lot of a large number of podcasts, and we have, and I'm not trying to say this to pat our back ourselves on the back all that much, I guess, but we haven't had to backpedal too much, if at all, really, with what we've been saying, and it's because we just look at the evidence. And we don't really, you know, we come up with opinions, but it's based just looking at the evidence. And if you've looked at it reasonably, it's unusual that something, you know, will drastically change it.
Yeah, no, and certainly what we've been cagey or careful on our evidence interpretation when the research is uncertain. And I mean, your recent nutrition podcasts are an example of that, right? We're not committing ourselves to saying things a lot because that research is cohort studies with quintiles or quartile analysis and all those challenges, where if you take statins, for example, they work this amount. We know that the studies of vaccines where they work this amount, at least for this long, you know, and that those kind of things we can come out because the studies are big, they're well done, and they're RCTs and there's lots of them and all of those kinds of stuff. So when we're confident, it's because the evidence allows that. And then other times we're more careful, and those ones, sure, we might need to reverse our position or thoughts, but we're careful not to go too far. Yeah,
no, exactly. And you know, single studies, you know, should really very rarely drive you to do anything. The only issue is if it's the only study, then you kind of lose it is what you're trying to do. And then I think one of the other ones that we've talked about is that we don't really care about the result. And if you go in with that attitude, it's easier to look at them.
Yeah, if you come in, like I used to joke that for the peer group, one of our mottos should be, we don't care. Mm-hmm. And of course, that would be, part of it was to be cheeky. But as Mike says, we don't care about the evidence. We care about showing you the evidence.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's the thing. And if you're married to something that we've talked about this philosophically, that once you become invested in a belief system, it becomes very hard for you to shake that. And so we've tried as much as possible to not get down that path too far.
Yeah, no, exactly. And we've covered some, we did, you know, what we thought were the top 20 medications. And if you remember, the average age of licensing for the top 20 medications was 1956, which says something about, you know, how far things have gone forward. We've tackled a lot of stuff to do with lab values. And, you know, we've also realized that really things don't change all that fast. And, you know, a lot of time when I'm talking to people, like, you know, they say, how do you keep up? And I say, don't.
You don't have to worry about it.
If it's really important, you'll really like to hear about it, because we know that, you know, most new medications are not better than what we already had. I mean, you know, 5% probably are. Maybe if you sort of look a little bit sideways, maybe you can go up to 10%, but most of the time they're not. And so I think it's really, it makes it easier when you know you're probably not missing anything if you do common principles. And then I think, one of the main things I think we've tried to do over the years is have fun with it and not take it too seriously.
And
if you really want to listen to a podcast where we didn't take things too seriously, it was the erectile dysfunction podcast. Where we didn't get out.
Somebody go as far as to say childish, and they wouldn't be wrong.
No. And it's not our fault.
Yeah, sure.
And I think that, you know, one of the reasons we're going to continue doing all of this, because there are so many external forces, and not necessarily evil forces, But there are, you know, there are guidelines and drug companies and government and medical societies and specialties, and they're going to continue to lead us down the path of a less than best medication use and more testing. And so we've still got a job for years and years to go. So I think that's, you know, those are some of the simple messages. And now we just thought we'd take a little bit of time for the end of the podcast and go over just what maybe just a two or three cases where we could talk about how to think about those simple messages and use them in some cases.
Yeah. So if you think about, you know, all of the things that we've talked about on this podcast and the other things that Peer has published over the years, things like the pain calculator, the BS Medicine cardiovascular risk calculator, mm-hmm. all of those things we've talked a lot about, but it warrants some kind of rethink or thinking again about just how you can apply these. And so James and I, our age, if you took our median age, would be 58. So we're going to go through somebody who's 58 with OA. And let's say that patient is presenting for the first time and they have the classic, you know, medial compartment knee OA that's gradually been worsening over years and they're having a flare. So now they're seeking something for it. You know, when you look at the decision aid that was created for osteoarthritis and the pain calculator and just the things that we've talked about on this podcast so many times, there are so many things to learn about that. Tina talked about it recently. Does losing weight help you address? Well, maybe, but the weight loss studies, they haven't really lost a lot. So we're not sure about that. Does it, did exercise cause that? And Adrian talked about that. We've talked on the podcast about all the different interventions, whether it be topical, NSAID treatments, exercise itself, steroid injections. We've even talked about how, there was a deceptive, study, published that tried to show that corticosteroid injections didn't work because the manufacturer or the lead author has a patent out on potential alternative treatment. And mm-hmm. so there, you know, we've addressed a lot of the issues that would arm you for kind of approaching this classic 58-year-old with OA pain. And we know that if you're in practice in primary care, in eMERGE, anything like that, you've seen this guy.
Yeah, no, and exactly. And so to get to the stage where we've looked at all, you know, really required a team effort. And so, you know, but the bottom line is that as a healthcare provider, you need to really know if you didn't treat, you know, what's the chance they would get better. And if you do treat, what's the chance? And that's been sort of our philosophy. And that's why we've created all of these tools and calculators for that. And we did exactly that for OA pain. And so in this example, you could go through all the different things that Mike's just talked about, exercise, glucosamine, topical NSAIDs, and all that sort of stuff. And we, as best we could, we're providing you the evidence around how much of an effect you would see with these different treatments. And it's why you don't need to go and look at all these studies. You need to find someone who's done that in a way that hopefully is as balanced as possible.
Yeah, and in this podcast, we would have spent, and we've talked here about mm-hmm. some of the kind of treatments that are a little bit more iffy, like viscosupplementation and why that is. And mm-hmm. the beauty of the podcast is we can go on a little bit in more detail about the challenges in interpreting research around viscosupplementation, what the conflict is, what others say about it, all of that kind of thing. So we can put kind of a broader kind of context of what the evidence says and then applying it. Even bringing in costs and stuff. And our decision aids reflect that, right? They yeah. include the general costs of things and things that have unclear benefits and why they do and all of those things. But here on the podcast, we've given you the tools to kind of approach that OA pain. And in it, not only do we talk about, as James says, how many will benefit if we do something and how many will benefit if we don't do anything, but we also told you, you know, we also provide information on what's the chance of being harmed by this.
Exactly. Yeah.
What are the kind of common harms? What are some of the occasionally, what are some of the tricks to this and the different interventions and things like that? And you know, if you look at OA pain, one of the things that's highly ranked from us is intra-articular steroids. And, philosophically, we've talked about how when you inject a steroid, we're hoping they're lasting 3 months, but it is a bit of a silly thing. Like if you started something for pain, like naproxen, and took two pills one day and then never took it again, but measured pain at 3 months, would we have expected to see a difference?
Yeah, no, exactly.
So we've kind of brought in those discussion points of, okay, what are the conflicting views? Where do they come from? And philosophically, what might be the problems? And so I think, in opioids would be a great example of that. We showed in the OA, in OA, we talked a lot about opioids and how once you go beyond kind of 4 weeks and certainly beyond 8 weeks, there's no benefit from them anymore for a chronic condition, mm-hmm. which is very sad. But the harms, 21% will drop out versus 7% because opioids are just not tolerable. That's not even talking about dependency and overdose and all of those issues. Just basically, if I started, 100 patients on an opioid, even of moderate potency, 21% couldn't even finish the trial. They would find it so intolerable. That's not even those who go down in dose or anything. They just quit because they can't tolerate it. Yeah. So this kind of conversation is so key. So let's imagine now that we've dealt with the OA, and that's a symptomatic condition, but we've also spent a ton of time on preventative treatments. So imagine that we're talking about the same 58-year-old guy who's in for, let's say someone he knows has just had an MI, and so he's getting a bit worried about his heart, or you've screened for lipids and A1C or his blood pressure. And so you need to talk about, the risk of cardiovascular disease with him, and spend some time, which we've also talked about, how do you sway someone from worrying about their cholesterol when they should be worrying about their chance of heart attack and stroke?
Yeah, and I think that's the key. The key thing is that, even with the OA stuff, a lot of it is about the education of one, what it is and how to think about it, and not everything works. And in the case of cholesterol, it really is trying to change the thought process, because people are terrified of the cholesterol, but they're not that worried about a heart attack. You know what I mean? Almost.
I know. It's insane. And so we've spent a lot of time going over that. But we've also talked a lot about interventions that actually make an impact. And even though we started out as a kind of therapeutic thing podcast, we really do stress the non-drug interventions. Mm-hmm. And so, if you looked at one of our tools, it's the Best Science Medicine Cardiovascular Risk Calculator. And mm-hmm. that one, and it's a CVD calculator. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, we offer all sorts of different options for calculating risk. And quite uniquely, but not only us, we also add in a button for you to click as to what might actually be the interventions that are beneficial to a patient and to what degree.
Yeah.
So on that, just like we've promoted over time, what's the benefit of physical activity? What's the benefit of the Mediterranean diet? What happens if the blood pressure is up and you treat that, or if you give a statin and those kind of things? And we give the information on the harms and the absolute benefits versus doing nothing. And so I think we've provided a lot of tools over the time mm-hmm. to give people an opportunity to have these discussions. And because we know you can't remember these numbers all the time, no. James and I do this for a living and we struggle. So that's why we create the tools. So you can also have quick access to them, whether it's the cardiovascular risk calculator with the answers of how effective the interventions are, all the way to the pain calculator to talk about that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it really, they're developed based on our philosophy that you really need to know. It's very simple what you need to know. If you don't test or if you don't treat, what's the chance something will happen? And then if you do a test or you do treat, where does it go to? And, you know, if it doesn't do anything, then that's a pretty simple answer. Like things like, you know, in our OA one, it's acetaminophen for osteoarthritis. The evidence is reasonably clear. It does nothing above placebo. But then we have on that calculator, there's about, what, eight or nine things that do have an effect. And so you could find a place where all of those could be used. And just and the same with the cardiovascular risk calculator. Many of the things that we do that lower cholesterol and blood pressure do have an effect on cardiovascular outcomes, but not all of them. So it's really important that you that somehow we get that across to you. And even though, and I think it's an important point that to get across is, you know, many of these tools give you pretty exact numbers, but we really want everyone to realize these are just ballpark estimates. You know, when there's no way we could figure out a person has a 10.3 risk of cardiovascular disease over 10 years. I mean, and I've seen some calculators that do it to 10.37.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's insane.
And the reason we actually go to 10.3 and in our calculator is because sometimes the benefit is under 1%. So otherwise it would look like nothing.
Yeah. And so we've written on that and talked about it on the podcast about what's the plus and minuses and what's the agreement between calculators. But we've given you so the BS Medicine calculator gives you information if your patient's diabetic. You can also click the different diabetic interventions. And where we haven't had things like AFib or osteoporosis, where we don't have a tool, we've directed you to where those tools exist. So if it's osteoporosis, it's the Mayo Clinic tool. And if it's AFib, then it's the SPARC tool.
Right.
And so we've directed you to ones where you can have that conversation of what happens if we do nothing, what happens if we do something. And that it's not only informing patients when you're having these discussions, it's informing us as doctors. And one of my, I'll tell you a story for me personally. I went to the doctor recently and it had been a long time since I had any screening tests. So we did some of those and she brought me in again and we were talking and she said, yeah, you know, you're just going to be around that 10% guy.
Yeah.
And she didn't need the calculator to tell me that because she had been down that road enough.
Probably hundreds of times.
Right. And so she could tell me what it was going to be. And she didn't push me either way to make a choice. If she did in any direction, it was probably to avoid. But I think she's appealing to someone of my nature anyway.
Yeah.
So I think, I see it in practice happening to me as a patient as well as when I've practiced it and been with my colleagues. So it's been that aspect of what we do has been very rewarding.
But it's
and it's not just us singing this. We're not the only ones singing from this song sheet. Others are, and I'm happy that it is having an impact.
But it's informed by evidence. It's not informed by fear or by guidelines or levels of things.
Yeah,
you know, which you know, I know from my own experience in practice, especially early on. You know, I would just be literally saying things that weren't based on evidence at all, but I've been told by someone that they thought it was a good idea. And
oh yeah, we can all think of
I still think there's a role for that. Don't get me wrong. There's, you know, there's still some sage advice you can get from people, but it does fundamentally change it when you go look at the evidence. And in my experience, and I think I'm sure you'd probably think the same thing, Mike, is that I've talked to literally maybe tens of thousands of people, but thousands of people who are in the healthcare genre. And you know as well as I do that, you know, they get to the age of 35 and 40 and they're feeling a little bit burned out by their, you know, their practice because it's, you know, it feels so, you know, got to write a prescription for this, got to write a prescription for that. And I've talked to literally hundreds of people who have taken some of these ideas and started to incorporate it into their practice. And it sort of rejuvenates them sometimes because it gives them, you know what I mean?
Yep. It can be transformative, right? That release from, I just gave a talk about the whole idea of what are we doing and how the idea that I've talked about on this podcast about that it's a magic show where we've been distracted away from the things that really matter. We're not watching the magic. You're just watching the entertainment. And the entertainment is surrogate markers, chasing numbers, all of those. And you're not watching where the real magic is. And that is people living and dying and feeling better.
Yeah, no. And helping them understand.
Yeah.
What they need to know, but you need to know it before you can even attempt to explain it.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, we totally realize it can get frustrating because, you know, there's so many, as we've talked about before, external forces of, you know, especially in primary care, you have to, and we know some great specialists. And by the way, a lot of specialists are doing exactly what we are saying.
Oh, for sure.
You know, so, but we do realize that the yin and yang of primary care versus specialist can be tricky. But if you're all talking from the same song sheet with a similar understanding of the evidence, those conversations are much easier.
For sure.
You know, so.
For sure.
Anything else you want to talk about in regards to that, Mike?
No, I think we have done a good job of just kind of bringing back to what we've learned and what we've, you know, and how how you can apply these principles, and how I think many listeners have already from the content on this podcast and the other products that we and Pierre, the whole team, have created together.
Yeah. And it's been a ton of fun. I mean, we've done 500 podcasts, and I wanted to really thank you, Mike, because, you know, for 13 years, I think we've had a blast doing this. It's been a lot of fun. I think we've created a lot of really useful things with all the people around us to help us with that. It's been a ton of fun. I'm sure you'd agree that it's one of my favorite educational approaches to getting knowledge out.
Yeah, for sure. And I appreciate your wisdom on seeing the importance of this. Your work all along, but the wisdom early on to see that podcasts were going to be an important tool for healthcare education. And I truly did not know.
No. Yeah. And people don't know this, but Mike's literally just the puppet. I have my hand way up there moving in his mouth and all that. And I can impersonate him really well. Not at all. No, it's been great fun and great fun having all the people come on the podcast and help us. And as I've said probably two or three times, really appreciate everybody out there who listens to us and supports us. And we're going to continue it for at least another one podcast. So stay with us. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.